to the PC Gaming Weak Spot, your recap of the last 7 days in PC video gaming. My name is Colin Mahern, and joining me this week, a guy who is still trying to discover if he can truly have it all. It is the one, the only, it's Mr. Matthew Big Castle.
Oh, I'm not wild about Matthew Big Castle.
Mr. Big from Sex and the City. I can't remember his...
Oh, of course. Yes, a big timely Sex and the City reference for everyone there.
Now it is, because they're bringing it back. So
they are bringing it back.
I'm
still having Sex in the City.
Yeah, an important part of their day. But was Sex in the City? I don't know why, but I can picture young Matthew really enjoying the trials and tribulations of one Carrie Bradshaw.
No, not at all. Because they just, I don't know, they live in a completely different world. When you live in a small village outside Winchester, the sort of metropolitan fantasy, I don't know, it just seems so far removed from your reality. You know, and your concerns. Back then, all I was interested in was like when the next issue of Games Master was out. I wasn't having any Sex in the City, let me tell you that.
But now, as you've grown up into be a respected journalist like Carrie herself.
Oh, right, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but her, you know, admittedly, they bookend the episodes with her doing some work, but she spent a lot of time just gallivanting around having the aforementioned Sex in the City,
mm-hmm.
Which doesn't really reflect the freelancer lifestyle. It's mostly trying to find interesting ways of previewing Hitman for the 12th time and then trying to get people to pay money by sending strongly worded emails. Does she ever do that? No.
You don't see that much, do you? No. No. So...
doesn't reflect the true freelancer lifestyle.
At least when it comes to video games. I don't know. Was she a lifestyle blogger? I don't know. But anyway, we are here to talk.
Relationships. That was all. Yes, that was her whole deal.
That was her deal. That was her deal.
If I was a mate, incidentally, I'd be really cross that my friend was taking all my private relationship matters and then just using it as fuel for her own column.
Unless that was that off camera? Maybe we didn't, like in the way that, you know, we didn't see Jack Bauer pissing in 24. Maybe we didn't see Carrie going to Samantha. Can I use the story that, you know, you told me about? To be honest, I haven't seen much Sex in the City, so I don't know.
We saw Jack Bauer in real time, so we know that he didn't piss.
He pissed during the ad breaks.
Never. He didn't. He never had time.
He went 24 hours. Without taking a piss.
Well, that's part of the drama of the thing. That's why he's so cross at the end of it, isn't it? He's all bottled up.
Just been holding it in. Yeah,
that, and it adds, like, you know, I think, in fact, that's quite an explicit point of the show, and you're meant to take that in consideration. And the whole time, you're like, oh, man, his wife's dead, and he needs a piss. It's a subtle layer, but it is another layer of drama.
We are not here to talk about relationships or terrorist attacks or heroin addicts or anything. Just go through all of the 24 seasons. We are here to talk about video games, and Matthew, this week has been a little bit more eventful, but still we are getting into the swing of things. But I asked you to keep it firmly shut last week, but this week you can get your crank out and open that news gob of yours, because I have some information snacks for you.
Nom, 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 nom,
info
nom,
snacks
nom, nom,
for nom, his gob.
So, in video games in the last 7 days, the biggest news story of the week, so... by right, we should be including this in headlines and hot takes. But Outriders, the Weak Spot's game of the year for 2021, has been delayed. It was originally meant to be coming out in late February, but it is now going to launch on April Fool's Day. Developer People Can Fly. What's that?
Or is it?
Or is it? Or is it indeed? Developer People Can Fly have said that you'll be able to download a demo of the game from the 25th of February, which I believe was the original release date. And any progress you make in the game can then be carried over into the full game. Exciting, Matthew. Exciting. Finally get our hands on Outriders and, you know, a decent demo.
I think that could be a good move because it's quite a fun, immediately satisfying feeling shooter. Like, that is one of its strengths, is it feels nice as a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of letting people kind of get that, get a bit more excited for it, because it doesn't, I don't think it particularly comes alive in footage because it's also sort of beige and muddy. But yeah, that's a good idea. Unless, of course, you get what basically happened with Marvel's Avengers, which feels like the kind of public beta, which is a demo really, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of killed all the interest a couple of weeks before it came out.
Yeah.
Like, people played that and went, nah. Like, you have to be really sure of your demo to do that.
But again, like, this Outriders is, it's not a live game. It is a story-driven co-op,
yeah,
Gears of War type thing. So, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
We shall see.
In other news, and slightly less important news, Twitch has banned the President of the United States of America, Donald Trump, about a fortnight before he left his post, which is a bit late, Matthew, but, you know. Sure.
It's a shame. I was actually a big fan of his Stardew Valley streams. Not enough credit given. The other stuff overshadows it, but, you know, credit where it's due. That guy could riff over turnip planting.
In an interview with PC Gamer, Grinding Gear studio head Chris Wilson said that COVID has slowed development of Path of Exile 2. Apparently the main difficulty they had was hiring people from other countries. So the game probably won't launch until 2022. Now, have you any history with Path of Exile? Or was Path of Exile one of those games that you were going to go hard in on before Path of Exile 2?
Yeah, I've played a few hours of it, but it's one of these things which it feels like, I don't know, you had to get in earlier on it.
Right.
In a way. Like, right. It feels like it's escaped me a bit because it's so complicated and it's, you know, probably, by all accounts, a journey that's really satisfying to take with the game. You know, that's where its fans are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it has, you know, so many fans who speak highly of it and enjoy the updates and whatnot. So, jumping in with Path of Exile 2 may be a better idea. I guess it's kind of like if you jumped into Destiny, like, 1-2 months before Destiny 2 comes out. Mm. It's a bit dark.
Mm. And Titanfall and Apex Legends developer Respawn Entertainment is working on a brand new video game series. That's according to a now pulled job ad on their website that Video Games Chronicle spotted. I mean, I never got around to Star Wars, what was it called? Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. But I'll always be interested in whatever Respawn do. I think Titanfall 2 in particular, one of the better shooters of the last however long. Even Apex Legends was the Battle Royale game that I was able to get into for a little bit until, you know, time passed me by. Mm. And then I went in a couple of months later and everyone was way better. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to leave this then.
They only make good games so far, so whatever they do, I am pumped for.
So yes, headlines and hot takes, where we discuss the bigger news stories of the past 7 days. And the main one, so as I said off the top, he's still relatively quiet in terms of video games. However, there is something that we may be able to talk a little bit about, Matthew, and that involves a man by the name of Harvey Smith. Harvey Smith, if you don't know, is the co-creator of Dishonored. He was lead designer on Deus Ex. What else has he done? Other things. He's quite decorated. Thief as well. Harvey Smith is working on an unannounced new game at Arkane Austin alongside some developers from the Dishonored and Prey teams, IGN reported during the week after spotting an interview that Harvey Smith did with a Vandal and translating it. And Smith said...
A Vandal?
What's that?
He was interviewed by a Vandal?
No, he was interviewed by capital V Vandal.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah. So Smith said about this new game, he said, quote, "I'm not on Deathloop, I'm on something else, working with the guys who made Dishonored and Prey." Now, no clarification was given as to, like, you know, I don't know if they pressed him as to, like, well, what is it then? Is it Dishonored 3? Is it whatever? And just on a little side note, he was asked about the Microsoft acquisition and he said Bethesda and Microsoft, quote, "fit perfectly." But when it comes to this new game, Matthew, so there's a few things. Like he mentions Prey. He says he mentions he's working on this game with developers who made Dishonored and Prey. So first of all, maybe let's take Prey off the list because he has no history with the series. No, that's not to say that it couldn't be Prey, but like, you know, any chance of a Prey 2 with Harvey Smith at the helm?
I'd be surprised if they did.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have its sales figures to hand, but I don't get the impression that it's necessarily the you know, top of the list of the next thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Which is why I said, like, let's cross that off, because I think that that's probably maybe the least likely option here. However, a Dishonored 3 or something equivalent is probably, that's probably what we're going to be looking at. But Dishonored as a series sort of wrapped up with the DLC Death of the Outsider. Like, it was all neatly wrapped up. This is the story. This is it done. That's not to say that it couldn't be a prequel or...
I don't know. My read on Death of the Outsider was more that it kind of, like, changed the rules a little bit of how that universe would work or the fiction of it would work in terms of, well, not to spoil Death of the Outsider, but at the end of it, things have changed a bit.
It's been a while. Spoilers. It's been a while. Well, I swear, it is difficult to talk about it without, like, what?
I think the fact that they have done two games, and for both of those games, you know, basically DLC, which verged on, well, in one case was a standalone game, but basically verged on, like, whole new stories. It's such a brilliantly constructed world that it is totally open up for more stories. You know, there's countless sort of tantalizing things you hear about in these games that you want to know about. You know, it's got a deep, deep lore to it. I think it's absolutely ripe for it. I think there's huge affection for it. It's total, you know, it's a critical darling. There's not really anything else quite like it in Xbox's game library. And obviously, whatever they've been working on, they were working on before Microsoft purchased Bethesda, which still, you know, hasn't. I think it's still in the works of going through. So it's not like... I doubt that whatever they're doing is Microsoft sort of influenced, but you know, you could definitely see Microsoft wanting a thing like this because they've got so many other sort of genres covered. A really good sort of definitive stealth thing is you know, another nice thing to have on Game Pass. I really, really hope they make another one. You know, Dishonored 1 and 2, two of the best games of the generation. And, you know, I'm not bored of this world at all. You know, they're a brilliant, brilliant team. It'd be interesting to see what a Dishonored from the other Arcane would look like if they made one. You know, it's just been Leon so far. This is the...
Austin.
Austin. Though Prey had a lot of the, you know, the character and qualities of Dishonored as well, just a very different setting. So it's not like, I don't for a second think there's like an A team and B team thing. I think you've got two equally brilliant studios. Whatever it is, you'd hope that it'd be relatively far along because...
When was Death of the Outsider? Was that 2016?
Yeah, but 17? that was Arcane Leon.
Well, that's
still
true. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they've been making Deathloop. Arcane Leon also helped out with Wolfenstein. So I'm pretty, as far as I can tell, I don't think, if Austin, I haven't made anything since the, was it Death Crash? What was the prey sort of expansion. I can't remember what it's called. That's exciting. What an amazing pair of studios making, you know,
interesting video games.
Well, like immersive sims, like it's totally my interest.
Would you say no to something completely new, or do you want a Dishonored 3?
I would not, like, they conjured the Dishonored universe out of nothing. You know, part of the reason it was so exciting was it was a completely new thing. I totally wouldn't say no to another new thing from them. I think they're amazing world builders, storytellers. Got so many interesting gameplay ideas. I'd happily take something new. I would like them to sort of stay in that kind of immersive sim space just because they're so good at it. Mm-hmm. You know, they are the best at it. I mean, arguably, they've got the people who kind of defined it on their team. So it would be a real shame if they didn't continue it down that avenue. But mm-hmm. at the same time, you don't necessarily want to box in developers if they want to do something else. But I get the feeling this is very much Harvey Smith's sort of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
This is where he's at his happiest and best.
So we'll see what comes of that. Maybe, I mean, yeah, I don't think you would get many complaints from people about a Dishonored 3. So yeah. We will see. In other news, Matthew, something that we like to champion, for those that aren't aware, is Xbox Game Pass. It's very good, people. It is very good. Now, this is a... we should be on commission. This is very much a rumor, all right? So don't get ahead of yourselves, nor will we. But... there is, there hasn't been an awful lot happened in the last week, but a rumor going around is that Ubisoft Plus, Ubisoft subscription service, is going to be coming to Xbox Game Pass. Now, this originally popped up on Twitter from someone with the username @IdleSloth84, along with a number of other rumors that we may or may not get into. Like, one was about Microsoft buying Sega, which has been rumored for a while, to be fair, Live Gold being rolled into Game Pass, and a couple of other things. But this rumor Game Informer said, or when this was doing the rounds on Twitter, Leanna Rupert, who is at Game Informer, said that she had heard rumblings about this back in October of last year. So, you know, who knows? But I have a feeling, Matthew, you have some strong opinions on this, do you? Or do you?
Yeah, I obviously you always take this stuff with a pinch of salt. I've got a bit of beef with the whole, you know, rando on Twitter says quite vague but like obvious sounding thing, which you can, you know, there's just nothing for it. It's just someone saying, oh, I hear this from my secret source. And if it turns out to be true, then, you know,
they look very clever
and smart. Mm. If it doesn't, you can just wave the hand and say, oh, well, it obviously fell through or didn't come to be, or this game got cancelled. I just hate vague rumor culture online. I feel people who offer these things up offer absolutely nothing. They risk nothing to spout it. And then everyone chases it and all the websites cover it. And you're like, what are we actually covering here? Just a random, you know, another journalist who just says, here's a thing. And everyone jumps around it. I think it's probably, I think my ire for this is probably left over from my magazine days, where it felt like, you know, in the news section, people be like, oh, we should cover this. And you're like, well, this is the internet story of today, and it will be dead in 24 hours. No one will care or remember. And, you know, do we really want to publish this in 5 weeks' time? And so I'm a bit wary of it. That aside...
No, I was going to say, let's pretend that this may be in the works.
Let's pretend this person hasn't just pulled this out of their ass.
Yeah.
And for some Twitter cred. Okay, let's pretend that for a second. yeah, it makes perfect sense. I wonder if it'll be like what kind of like tier of their services, because I thought they had like the sort of the one which gives you all their games, which I don't see them bundling it. You know, they're not basically going to just give up.
Well, it's like the EA. So EA Play. Is it just called EA Play? But basically, EA's.
It's like the library of older games.
Exactly.
And a trial of the newer games. Is that right?
I believe that's right, yeah. But whereas you can pay a little bit extra and then you'll just get the new EA games. Like, I could imagine, again, if this is, there is something to this, I could imagine it being, you'll get the older Ubisoft games and then, yeah, maybe a trial of the newer ones. But to give, to just give like a Far Cry 6 and a whatever else, I don't know.
Some kind of vault of older content. Absolutely. That makes perfect sense. I could understand that. The idea that, like, you know, Xbox owners can pay this, but I just financially, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, literally to secure that deal for like Bethesda, you had to buy Bethesda. Mm. why would you give that away? That's madness. So it's a bit of a vague story on that front. I have no doubt Xbox are looking to punch up the service, fatten it out with more treats. That makes total sense. But Ubisoft make big games that people love to play and are best sellers, and they're not just going to cut out a chunk of their market for that.
I mean, there obviously is loads of rumors floating around about Microsoft and who they're going to buy next. It seems like they have a real war chest and they're just going to like purchase as many big things as possible. Obviously, Bethesda was a real signal of intent, but I don't know why, but I see Ubisoft as a bridge too far. Because as you said, they just seem a little bit too big. Even though I would have said, you know, Bethesda, obviously, everyone has a price.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, they seem very successful. You know, why
would they sell? Yeah. You know, like, yeah, everyone indeed does have a price. And
what's your price? What would you sell yourself to Microsoft for?
Not 6 billion or whatever it was, Bethesda. Like, maybe, I don't know, like a couple of grand, maybe, you know?
You'd sell yourself so that Microsoft could do whatever they wished with you for 2 grand.
Well, okay, I wasn't saying couple in the literal sense. All right, a few grand then.
I'd be like, I wouldn't sell myself to Microsoft for anything less than
$10 million. But like, think about it. What are Microsoft going to do? What are they going to do with my likeness?
Theoretical situation. I mean, what are they going to... Yeah, I mean, they're like, great. We finally got the license to...
to call them on.
Terrible Twitter thoughts.
Like, you know, so in that sense... Now, if it meant I couldn't work and earn elsewhere, then we would have to... Like, if I was
That's why I'd want enough money to be able to just retire on.
Like, that's fair. Whereas if it was... They were just licensing my likeness, I wouldn't have to break the bank.
If they were like, here's 2 grand, you can never do the weak spot again, I'd be like, well, maybe I would do it. I don't know.
Oh! What's that coming up ahead, Matthew? Trying to change the subject very quickly. It is Tech Corner. Amazing. Now, in technology news, it's a big one next week, but not this week, because CES is currently happening at time of recording and up until Thursday. So I'm sure there will be loads of news on some cool fridges and microwaves and maybe even a couple of PCs. Things as well. But Matthew, my question to you, as we are coming into the thick of the E3 of technology, what I want to ask you is, what is the coolest home appliance you've ever owned?
I'd say my fridge, but it's not anything special, but it's got a water dispenser on it. It makes ice cubes. Mm. I mean, in the summer, both of those get a lot of use. It's like, it was a shop display model, so we got it for quite cheap. Otherwise, we would have bought a cheaper fridge. Mm. Yeah, so I think it's got a little dent in it somewhere, which is why we were able to get it cheap. So it's like the one thing we have that is a little out of our, you know, kind of sort of financial living bracket. So everything else is kind of fine in the kitchen, but this is quite a nice fridge.
Show and tell, we can't afford a proper jingle. Jingle. It's meant to be jingle.
Yes, show and tell is the part of the PC Gaming Weak Spot where we talk to each other, but tell you about the games that we've been playing over the last 7 days.
Yes.
Matthew Castle, the day has come. The agent is here. And then he's going to travel over there and over there and over there. We're not allowed today to talk about all of his trips, only a number of them. Hitman 3. Before we get into the thick of it, how much are you allowed to talk about, I suppose, is the best way to start this conversation.
I've been playing a pre-build, which is the first two levels of the game. The build doesn't have the other levels of the game. It's got the earlier, it's got Hitman 1 and 2 in it, which is an important thing. If you played Hitman 2, you'll know that you can import earlier levels and they kind of get brought up to the technical standard of the latest game. So it's the same with 3. So it's got all the Hitman 1 and 2 levels. If you previously owned them, you can bring them in and add jazz. But for the sake of this preview, I was focused on the first two locations in the game, which are Dubai, set in this skyscraper called the Scepter, and a level in Dartmoor, set in a kind of country house where there has been a murder.
Mm-hmm. Now, for those watching, I'm right in saying, aren't I, that we're not allowed to show anything from the second stage,
but you
are allowed to talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what do you want to know?
Well, I suppose my first question is, how different is Hitman 3 to Hitman 2? Or does this very much feel like an expansion? Because Hitman 2 added a couple of things. It added those picture-in-picture things. I can't remember what they were actually called.
But just picture-in-pictures.
Yeah. But they just, I thought they had a fancy game name. But yeah, they added them. They added hiding in grass, in crowds. Does Hitman 3, does it have any addition to that level? Or is it very much an expansion?
I mean, I think it's a bit of a disservice to call it an expansion, in the same way that I think it would be a bit of a disservice to call 2 an expansion. You know, it's got as many levels as the others, so it's going to have 6 levels. These are, they're big, substantial spaces to play in. You know, if you've played Hitman 1 or 2, you know that 6 levels, you know, that doesn't mean it's a slight game. You know, you can play either of those games for hundreds of hours, I'd argue. So it's, you know, another equal chunk. Where it's maybe, I'd say the way it kind of differs mechanically are maybe a bit slighter than Hitman 2. So in this, he now has a camera which can sort of hack a few electronics and is used for a few key story missions. It's used probably more heavily in the Dartmoor level, where you're the detective, where you can play a detective who's investigating this murder mystery and you can use the camera to kind of scan bits of evidence. Here it's used mainly for hacking the window locks so you can climb around outside the skyscraper. Right. So it's a bit more of just like a little kind of gimmick thing. It adds a bit of a rudimentary photo mode as well, in that you can take pictures with it and you can put a couple of filters on. I wouldn't call it, it's not like the action pauses and you can zoom the camera around Agent 47. But, you know, you can take some shots, and there are a few like in-level achievements for photographing kind of particular situations and things. And, you know, if you can kind of, I don't know, spy on certain situations.
The camera is like, is it just hold it whilst, because I saw it there in the footage a while ago, like it just press a button, zoom in on a particular thing, and then it just opens that window?
It's just a little spy gadget that
okay,
you know, adds a couple of little cool moments. Nothing particularly complicated. I'd say the bigger changes are more like visual. They've updated their Glacier engine, which is what their sort of in-house engine they use. Better sort of reflection, shinier surfaces and lighting. You know, it maybe jumps out a bit more when you replay the levels from Hitman 1 and 2, because if you remember them well, you'll be like, oh, that's cool. You know, that's a noticeable improvement on, like, floor reflections and things. And I think there are plans to add, like, proper outright ray tracing maybe down the line. Oh. I think I read that. But this is pretty good. I mean, as far as the reflections go, you know, in terms of showing the scenes and things, I'd say maybe what a bigger difference is maybe one of like tone rather than mechanics, in that it feels slightly more sort of cinematic in places. It feels like, you know, this is like the end of their trilogy. You know, there's maybe a bit more story, or like they, you know, the story's coming to a head. And so do you know what mission stories are?
That is where you're hearing NPCs discuss a particular thing, is it?
So opportunities, and then they were called opportunities in Hitman 1. They change into mission stories. They're basically like little dramatic scenarios that you can follow through that kind of get you close to a target, or kind of give you a kind of a sort of signature kill opportunity. And, you know, normally the past two games have had loads of these in each level. Here, in these first two levels at least, there are actually fewer. There's only three mission stories per level. But I would say that, like, each one has a story which feels like it's like the big cinematic version of this level. So what you're seeing here actually isn't one of them. This is me just doing some other assorted gubbins. But so in Dubai, for example, you know, there's one of the mission stories is about like hacking this computer to try and sort of get schedule a meeting between the two of the targets. And then you kind of break in and to the room they're in. And the story kind of, it takes you on a pretty sort of comprehensive tour of the whole level. And, you know, there's this little hacking bit and where you're in a computer server. It all feels very Mission Impossible. The level starts, obviously, with you outside clambering around. That's just like a purely cinematic sort of like, you know, almost like Uncharted-y kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's more a question of tone, I'd say, in that it you know, it feels like it's, you know, if you only played these mission stories once, you'd get this slightly, like, a quite sort of exciting version of the level. Likewise, in Dartmoor, the kind of equivalent story there is there's been a murder in this house where you've got to kill this lady. You can steal the detective's identity, go to the house and basically play detective, where you have to solve the murder in order to then get a meeting with your target.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, again, like quite a substantial story. You know, it took me about like an hour and a half to sort of interview the suspects and things, which I'd say is like a bit more sort of involved than the stories have been in the previous games. So that's another change. Like, that there's maybe less obvious stories, or, you know, less stories on offer, but they feel a bit grander. And that isn't to say the levels lack all the characterful, you know, assassinations. If anything, it feels like there's a lot of stuff that would have been stories before that they've just not put that, you know, they let you discover for yourself. So there's a bit more like listening to NPC dialogue to get hints of like, oh, I could do that. And, you know, like this whole thing of infiltrating, becoming a chef and serving him his poison dinner, you know, that pretty much is a mission story in a previous game.
That's interesting. Yeah, because as you say, I feel like that would have popped up a little bar in the center of the screen saying mission story revealing previously.
You know, go and get the chef uniform and then do this and that. And that's you know, that's all good. But I feel like they've struck maybe a bit more careful balance from these first two levels of, like, a slightly more accessible, sort of enjoyable kind of run through of a Hitman level. But then they've put a lot of, you know, there's still a lot of stories and opportunities for the kind of fans to discover without that level of guidance. So it's kind of a bit more of a middle ground. I should also add one other thing they've added is permanent shortcuts. which people who haven't played Hitman, every time you play a Hitman level, it totally resets. It's like a big clockwork mechanism. You know, all the characters will be in the same location. That's how you can be a Hitman. You know what everyone's going to do. You plan around that. This is still, you know, largely the same, except the levels have a couple of, like, doors and ladders, which if you can reach them, and they're often in hard-to-reach places, you can create a permanent shortcut that you can use on future playthroughs. So here, for example, you can drop a ladder from the penthouse down to the helipad, and that will always be there. So next time you play, it's that much easier to get to the penthouse because you can just go up to the helipad and zip in. So it kind of... oh, we're about to jump off the building here, which is the end of the level. And yeah, with my two guys killed. Yeah, so that's a bit of a mechanical tweak. It's quite interesting. And according to the sort of developers, that's to try and, like, you know, encourage people or show people that if you play, you know, when you play a Hitman level, you are meant to replay it and replay it and replay it and find new ways of doing it. And that feels maybe like a more direct incentive by saying, well, you made this tangible change. Mm-hmm. So next time, why don't you use that and see where, you know, the mission takes you or whatever. And if you are a more hardcore player, I don't think that, like, undermines the central appeal. Like, it creates some, it cuts out a bit of busy work, maybe creates some, like, faster routes if you're trying to do, like, speed running stuff, which is, the time is really, really integral to your score. You know, and that's where the leaderboard game comes out of as well. So, yeah, I think it's subtle changes to Hitman 2, but smart changes. And fundamentally, they haven't broken anything. You know, they haven't, you know, they haven't undermined it. I mean, the you know, you have to see all the locations before you can judge the whole game. Mm-hmm. I'd say both these locations are, like, a little smaller and tighter than, like, some of the sprawl you got in Hitman 2. I don't know if that's deliberate. Like, you know, Hitman 2 opens with this, it opens with a tiny little beach house, which is like the tutorial there. But then you're in Miami, which is just
massive,
like, vast. Often the levels are so big that they feel like three Hitman levels stuck together. Like, often you'll have, like, you know, take Miami. You know, you've got, like, the racetrack with all the crowds around it. You've got the sort of back area where all the staff are in the kind of the pit, you know, the pit stops, the engineering rooms. Then you've got, like, the Kronstadt sort of research center, which is where they're building all the cars. Mm-hmm. Like, any
aquarium as well. Places, you could nearly even say maybe a fourth one.
Any of these places could be sort of standalone levels. And maybe it's just overwhelming. Like, I love it and I love Hitman and I know what it's trying to do. And, you know, I've always loved its vibe. And this, you know, I loved how Hitman 1 and 2 kind of really grew that out and expanded it. But I can also understand, and I have seen people say that it's quite daunting to play. You know, some people go in and they're just overwhelmed with information and potential opportunities. And in this sense, this feels like these first two levels feel maybe more like the beginning of a game. Like, Dubai is still quite big, but it's quite a self-contained space. There's basically a split between the lobby and the kind of social activities there, and then access up to the sort of penthouse suite. You know, one target's downstairs, one target's upstairs. It's quite relatively self-contained. You can get them to meet, but in quite a fixed way. And then the house is quite large, but, you know, it's probably smaller than the Paris level in Hitman 1, okay. And you can, like, run around the outside quite quickly and you get the lay of the land. I mean, what makes the second level really interesting is that Agent 47, like, it's not a social space. The whole level is obviously private property. So Agent 47 is trespassing the second he enters the level, basically, the second he pops over the fence, which is why they've given you this detective. Because if you can catch this detective, steal his costume, all of a sudden, this detective has access to basically 98% of the level. He can go anywhere. He's allowed to go anywhere. And it's kind of a dream Hitman level in that sense, in that you have total freedom to just sort of observe and go, oh, maybe I could, you know, stick a screwdriver in that plug socket and maybe I could pull this out or I could drop this chandelier. Where normally you're trying to improvise while also be stealthy. But if you're this detective, you can basically do the have free run of the place. But then it becomes,
because I was going to ask you about that second level, because it, I think that just sounds terrific. Like the idea of Agent 47 solving a murder is it's a really interesting idea, and I hope that there is more of that in the other levels as well. Like if it's not just target, it would be cool.
I get the feeling like just from the way the cutscenes were going, that the story is going to be a bit more like, I think the levels may have a few more narrative elements that are specifically about Agent 47 and tied to him. You know, this is the end of their little world of assassination storyline. And I get the impression they're going to try and weave in some sort of dramatic revelations in there. But yeah, as a self-contained level, the Dartmoor is a really good example of like showing off the strength of like the writing team, which I think is a really underrated part of Hitman. Because a lot, you know, not the overarching story, but more the in-level stories, the kind of characters. There's a lot of like caricature, you know, it's very sort of satirical and it sort of targets this sort of like really rich, snide English family. Like they're all horrible bastards. You know, I've seen lots of people liken it to Knives Out and it kind of has a bit of that energy. But like they establish characters really quickly as you meet them all, you know. It's interesting because that you get all these big characters, you know, none of them are targets. You know, the target is the head of the family who's, you know, so you have to deal with these other people. But there are like escalation contracts, which are like the side missions. And one of the escalation contracts is all about killing off the family. And then all of a sudden the whole level changes and it's about like, you now have a house of bastards to kill. Which is quite fun. But
I mean, that's the magic of Hitman, isn't it? Like you even said that it's here is your toy box and we will change what game we are going to play with all of these toys, depending on what.
Yeah, and it's very good. And I think the main games, the main missions are so massive that most people, I imagine a lot of people can just play those and get their fill. But I do like the escalation missions, which are kind of the side tasks, because they can put like quite a unique spin on something. They can really change your like perception of a level, which I really, really enjoy. They can like draw out other elements of the gameplay. Like they're often a bit more hardcore because a lot of them put like conditions like you can't put on any disguises. So it becomes like a really pure stealth game and you have to use like every inch of the level, everything available to you to get through it. I mean, particularly with that, I think that Dartmoor level is particularly great for that because, like I said, if you're in Hitman's suit, anyone sees you, that you know, they'll sound the alarm. So this whole house becomes this incredibly sort of tense area. It's really a lot of fun.
So very much looking forward to playing the other four levels.
Those remaining four levels would really have to like massively shit the bed and go off in a different direction to kind of like derail this. Whether or not, like, I think it's sort of impossible to say, like, Hitman 1 or Hitman 2, you know, because I feel like they're all of this sort of package, the way that you import them in, and it basically becomes this big Hitman project. Like, I still play Hitman 1 levels when I had Hitman 2, and, you know, playing this preview build, I've been playing Hitman 1 and 2 levels again. So to me, it just, I kind of struggle to take them apart. I just see it as this huge sort of trilogy of like this huge collection of levels, the whole thing. I mean, I think that is the best way to play it. I mean, if you haven't played any of these games, that is what I do. I just get the whole lot and God, you'll be playing for months, I'd imagine. But we'll hopefully have played the full game, by this time next week, which is obviously when the game comes out on the Tuesday, I think.
Oh, yeah, it is next week, isn't it?
Yeah, so, you know, we'll know.
exciting times ahead. So I haven't been playing Hitman, and instead I have been playing I was going to say a 2D platformer, Matthew, but that would be wrong, because I would have liked to have been playing a 2D platformer, but no. Instead, I was playing the auto runner that is Super Meat Boy Forever. So, about 10 years ago, Super Meat Boy came out and it was terrific. It was, I mean, it was very important for independent developers. It was in Indie Game the Movie alongside Braid and Fez. And when you think of like three independent video games that had an impact, they would definitely be among three of the top whatever, even if you want to say top three. Now, Super Meat Boy Forever isn't that important, I suppose. It is, it's not really going to have any sort of massive industry shaking impact. It is, yeah, so it's not a 2D platformer. It is an auto runner, as I said, wherein Meat Boy and Bandage Girl, well, they've had a child, congratulations. The child is called Nugget, but Nugget has been kidnapped by the returning Dr. Fetus, and you have to defeat him to get your kid back. So on the topic of story, like, it's actually a little more fleshed out than the original.
Oh, that's what we want.
But no, but hang on, right? Because I really wanted to make a mention of, like, rather than necessarily the story, but the actual, like, the cutscenes and the flavor that they add to this game, which ties into the art as well, I suppose. But, like, you, in between, at the end and at the beginning of Worlds, you get these, like, short little cartoony, I mean, it's cliche to say no, because everyone does whenever there's anything that looks a little bit like this, but it's like a Saturday morning cartoon show that we all remember, when it wasn't just James Martin on the telly at the weekends. But like, it has that hint of Ren and Stimpy-ness to it as well, or that, you know, your darker kind of Nickelodeon show, just with bright colours and all that. It's nostalgic. And the cutscenes, very similar look to the art, which is previously this minimalist, pixelated Super Mario Brothers kind of inspired visuals. Again, it's more cartoony. Like, both Meat Boy and Bandage Girl, they have more life. Like, to be honest, I prefer this art style. You can see...
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, like, you can see the expressions in the characters change. They're just way more, for lack of a better term, more characterful. Like, when they punch or jump, they clench their teeth. When they're just sprinting straight ahead, there's like this kind of focus in their eyes. Yeah, I think it just...
It's got the determination of a
big sack of meat, indeed. In saying all that, after a number of hours playing Super Meat Boy Forever, I've come to the conclusion that I just want Super Meat Boy 2.
Well, yes. Isn't that what anyone... And that's obvious, right?
Like, at the beginning of... Well, like, the thing is, right? I don't hate auto runners, like, or endless runners. Like, I think Jetpack Joyride was really good. Cannibalt obviously started it all. The BitTrip Runner series. Like, it's not like auto runners are bad. Like, there are a number of examples of really good ones. But, you know, if you're unaware of how these work, because it feels like they've had their day in the sun and aren't as common as they once were. Like, at the beginning of each level, Meat Boy or Bandage Girl, if you want to play as her, you can in this one. They'll begin running from left to right. You control you can control their direction. All you can do is jump, punch, which acts as a dash when you're midair, and you can dive downwards as well. But my problem with it here is that I suppose the levels aren't meticulously crafted in the way that the original was. It's procedurally generated here. And because of that, it feels like every time you die, sometimes it's not necessarily your fault. And that is... You can't have that in Meat Boy. Because, like, again, when you think about the first one, it's always your fault. It is never the game's fault. It gives you all the tools you need to complete the level. And if you don't do it, it's either that you were complacent or you're just not good enough. Whereas here, because of that procedural generation aspect, I don't know, like it just doesn't feel as, for lack of a better term, as well crafted. Like, it's not that you'll see saw blades just floating in the sky and it's incredibly messy or whatever. Like, the level still, the layout of the level still very much makes sense, because what they've done is, as far as I'm aware, they've sort of designed chunks and then as you go through...
Yeah, I was going to say, there are bits of this I'm looking at thinking, that just looks like a good Meat Boy level.
Yeah, like they just pull in chunks, basically. It just lacks, I don't know, it just lacks a cohesion that the original had.
Question, how is it an endless runner if it's got levels? How does that work?
Well, it's an auto runner rather than an endless runner.
It's an auto runner, not an endless runner,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. But if I had, like, even the bosses, right? The bosses are... as far as I'm aware, like I'm pretty sure the bosses are the bosses and that's that. They don't change from playthrough to playthrough. And for that reason, I think they're pretty all right. Like they utilize the game's auto running, the dashing, the punching in quite a solid way. There isn't much variety when it comes to their attacks. Like they don't have phases necessarily, but I think they're relatively enjoyable. But if this was just a modern Meat Boy, so the same controls as before, a 2D platformer, right? But it had those new inclusions, like the punching, the levels are longer now and they have checkpoints. If you had that, I would definitely be way more interested in this, because there are clever little ideas, such as the walls that have these kind of conveyor belt things that will propel you upwards or downwards or whatever. There are obviously enemies now as well. There's a lot of really interesting ideas. I just think that they were put into the wrong game.
I'm just curious why they changed it. I just, you know, what the thinking was, you know, why you didn't just make, you know, this art style, these mechanics, these new bits of level furniture, and just make levels.
Well, I'm pretty sure, I haven't checked.
Is he not
this
allowed?
I haven't considered that. I mean, that's an interesting question.
It's not the both of them that made the first one, is it?
Edmund Macmillan, who went on to make The Binding of Isaac, isn't involved in the development of this.
Tommy Refenes,
yeah. But yeah, I don't know, I'd like a Meat Boy too. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, you asked, like, you know, why not it just a 2D platformer? Like, this was announced, I think, in 2013 or 14. This was announced a long time ago when maybe auto runners or endless runners were more common. And, you know, you had your, what was that one on phone? Temple Run, do you know, like where they were making more money? Because this was originally just for phones, I think.
Well,
that's
the interesting thing. Like that makes sense, because that's the thought process. A lot of people, you know, even Nintendo, when they bought Mario to phone, they made it
Mario Run. Rayman Jungle Run.
Yeah, exactly. So I can understand that. But like, yeah, so if this started as a phone project, that's fine. What I wouldn't understand if someone was like, I'm making a PC game and I'm going to make it an auto runner, because no offense to the auto running genre, but it does feel like a solution to a phone control problem than necessarily the natural kind of end point of a genre. It's I know that's maybe that's just personal taste, but like,
no, I think
I can't think of any auto. I would always rather play a proper platformer than an auto runner.
Because I suppose, again, like, this is if you don't want to call it a sequel, a spin-off, whatever, it's the next Meat Boy, basically. And there are just times when you're going through a level and let's say you miss the jump on the right side and you have to use the wall there to go back to the left to then go back to the right. It just becomes frustrating because you're going, and rightly or wrongly, you know, it's Meat Boy, so you go, no, I should be able to just jump onto that one.
It's a game made for, you know, auto runners, I find, are like games made for like momentum and rhythm, and they kind of look cool when you're in full flow. And when you're kind of playing as the level kind of demands, because there kind of is a solution to the levels often in terms of the route, where I'd say some of Meat Boy's appeal was in the desperate struggle for survival, where you could pull it back from the brink and feel absolutely amazing for it. And obviously Meat Boy had that thing too, where you could just play it beautifully and that would be great. But I think the kind of panic and the kind of the panic kind of sort of life-saving maneuver is not very satisfying in auto runners. Mm-hmm. You know, it just feels like you've not done the level right, rather than, you know, you're in a situation you can kind of, you know, pull back control from the brink.
Yeah. Like, and it's that lack of control that just becomes frustrating. Like, again, I really like the art. I really like a lot of the ideas, and maybe, I don't know, they could, maybe they're already working on Meat Boy 2. I don't know. But yeah, that would be good.
Yeah,
I very
like
much enjoy
kind of,
Meat Boy 2.
It doesn't feel like it's made much of a dent, you know, in that.
It came out at a weird time as well, to be fair. It came out on the 23rd of December. So a lot of publications and whatever had broken up for Christmas. So reviews weren't as plentiful as they
is
would
it,
have been.
Is it, Epic Game Store thing, right?
Yes, Epic, yeah.
Yeah. They probably covered their development costs with that then.
Yeah.
That's how it tends to be.
You know, maybe Meat Boy 2, perhaps. Matthew, you've written a game down here that I have never even heard of. So do tell me, what is Conspiracy? What is this?
Yeah, so this is just a little short one I wanted to throw in. This is a kind of a sort of detective game in the ilk of maybe like Her Story. The footage I'm going to show you isn't the most exciting thing in the world, because as you make progress, spoilers inevitably appear. So the basic thrust of what you're trying to do is match the dates in the top left to the events on the right. And obviously, if I showed you me putting in the dates, those are the answers, and it would be a huge spoiler. But the way that you're trying to kind of work out these dates is by listening to kind of audio tapes and reading these documents, which are like excerpts from newspapers or emails or journals or whatever. And it uses a similar sort of deduction system to Obra Dinn, in that you put in a few answers and it like verifies them in clumps. So I think once you can't just, you know, put one answer in and then verify. Once you've put in five correct answers, it says, yes, these five are correct. And it gives you like the next chunk of information. So it's quite a pure detective game in that sense. What I like about it is, I really like these kind of detective games where you get loads of information and you have to parse them. You know, it's quite like Obra Dinn. It's quite like Her Story. Obviously, it's presented in this very minimalist fashion. I think what this has, which those don't, is it's not entirely self-contained. Like, there is a need to do a bit of research outside the game. So I had it in a window and I had Google, because there are references to, like, real locations, real life dates. Someone will say, like, you know, oh, we did this thing on this festival. So you Google that festival to see when it happened. So you're trying. So it basically like embeds its conspiracy in like real world events, you know, as conspiracy theories do. It feels quite real. Another level of quite like fun kind of reality crossover is that this first tape, for example, is performed by like John Ronson. As John Ronson, like, you know, because he writes, you know, he's written lots of books, investigated lots of like weird fringe sort of societies and things, you know, including this kind of conspiracy material. And it just sounds really real. It just sounds like you've got to listen to this John Ronson podcast and like unpick, you know, try and find the kind of clues in there. So you're kind of cross-referencing stuff. So it looks really minimalist, but it's got that kind of cool sort of detective hook I really like. It's from a guy called Tim Scheinman, who normally makes, his games previously tend to be like free projects. So he did a game last year called Family, which was like a music detective game where you were trying to, you were listening to like looking at like music reviews, album covers, snippets of songs. And similar to this, you were trying to deduce the names of these bands. That was like a free thing. Rock Paper Shotgun wrote about it. It's on Itch and, you know, very, very cool. This is like, it's like £3.50 on Steam. You know, it's a couple of hours long. So like a little interesting thing that if you are into those kind of detective games, you know, you should give a go. I just liked how it was like embedded in reality. I liked how kind of feasible it all sounds. I mean, it kind of riffs on, you know, it's kind of a satire on real life conspiracy theories, and there are references to lots of like genuine things. So it all kind of blurs together. Yeah, just a neat little thing out today on Steam and Itch.
It's time for Mystery Steam Reviews. Yeah.
Yes, Mystery Steam Reviews is the part of the PC Gaming Weak Spot where I, Colin Mahern, and he, Matthew Castle, test the knowledge of one another via Steam Reviews that are a mystery. But if you're unaware, here are the rules. So, both I and Matthew indeed bring three Steam reviews to the MSR Arena, but we omit the name of the game associated with each review. Our opponent must correctly guess the game attached to each review. One correct answer equals 1 point. While both combatants have 90 seconds on each MSR, we both also have help in the form of three lifelines. These can be used at any stage during battle and also pause the 90-second timer. Each lifeline can only be used once, and they are as follows. Question, where the hot seat haver gets to ask a yes or no question. Second opinion, where a second review is given to the warm chair sitter. And genre, where the genre of the game is revealed to the one with the warm arse. So, this week, Matthew, in celebration of everyone's favourite agent, the 47th one, we have chosen six video games, I3, U3, that feature bald protagonists / prominent playable characters that prominent playable characters / protagonists that have very, 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 very tight haircuts. Because, as I found out when I went looking, the amount of actual bald.
Yeah. Out and out baldies.
Quite hard. Yeah. Mm. And I should say, but not created characters from like an RPG or
yes,
whatever else.
Yeah, you can't just pick something where you can make a bald man. Yeah.
I think we're all pretty clear on that.
They're not all protagonists. Some of them are like just key characters, right?
They were meant to be playable.
Were they? Interesting.
But, look.
Well, we'll see how we get on.
Matthew, would you like your first Mystery Steam review?
Yes, please.
Oh my, what a great game. What a buggy piece of shh. The game itself is not like the games before. It's more action-based, but still great. If you loved the series name classics, then this will be first shocking because of massive changes, but the most shocking are the bugs. Who do I still recommend it? Because it's a good game and it should be played. And that's from Miss Cone. It is indeed recommended, and they played it for 8 hours. Matthew, your time starts now.
Very buggy, and it's part of a series. Listen, you got to hit me up with that genre.
Oh, all right. We're pausing the timer early. The timer's paused.
I mean, all that says is buggy and a series. That could be anything. I've got to, if I'm going to continue my New Year's resolution of getting all of these right.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. Genre, you said, was it? Okay, so the genre of this video game is as follows. It is an action-adventure stealth video game. An action-adventure stealth video game. And your timer, which is at 1:16, restarts now.
An action-adventure stealth video game. I mean, that could be... I mean, that suggests it's a Hitman. I suggest you've gone in with Hitman, but it's got to be a buggy one, so it's got to be one of the old, maybe one of the older ones. Action, adventure, stealth. Or is there a... There's a Splinter Cell where he's got quite short hair. He's quite bald. But I can't remember which one it was. And was it particularly buggy? It was the... it was one of the later ones. Was it Pandora Tomorrow? It was the next one. Chaos Agent? Double Agent? That's an action-adventure stealth game. Was it buggy? Might have been buggy. 8 hours? Oh, God, I don't want to break my New Year's resolution, but I feel like I've got... I don't want to waste my clues.
15 seconds.
I'm gonna guess Splinter Cell. Double Agent.
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer.
So, Matthew, the genre lifeline did a lot of the heavy lifting there in terms of it being an action-adventure stealth game. You said the review told you it was part of a series, a long-running series, and it was indeed quite buggy. You were thinking maybe an earlier Hitman. And you said, no, wait a minute. Sam Fisher, he had a very tight haircut in one of them there Tom Clancy video games. So... And you ended up saying, Splinter Cell, Double Agent. Matthew, I can tell you that Splinter Cell, Double Agent is... the right answer.
Whoa!
Well done. Well done.
And chances?
Finally, there is an example of the new ruling we brought in a couple of weeks ago into the Rule Bible where...
Oh, you would have said Tom Clancy's.
Yeah, so... Yeah. You know.
Oh, baby!
So let's change the score on that. Well done, Matthew. You're
Oh, wow.
Do you know what?
I
kind of do want to see you go. I just want to... I'm all in on this now. I want Matthew to go on a streak.
Everything's coming up, Castle.
Right, let's see. I'm going to break my streak right now. Matthew, could I have my first Mystery Steam review, please?
Hat in real life equals $20. Hat in game equals $500. I like. Sandai recommends it with 4,914.7 hours on record. But they wrote this review when they had merely 1,891.9 hours.
Pitiful. Time starts now. So I'm pretty sure I know what this is.
Okay.
And that is because... that is because I was looking up games with bald video game characters. I think this is Team Fortress 2. Because they obviously have hats. I could sit here for another minute and dwell on this or use lifelines that I don't think I need to use. I think this is the heavy in Team Fortress 2. Yeah, Chris, Team Fortress 2?
Is that your final answer?
That is indeed, it may come back to bite me on the ass, my final answer.
Very confident guess there with 44 seconds left on the clock. But were those 44 seconds that could have been used better? Pondering other bald characters. You've honed in on the heavy from Team Fortress 2 because of its hats. And I'm guessing playtime. The correct answer is... Team Fortress 2!
Yes! Get in! Get in! Lovely. 4 for 4. Don't worry, Matthew. My streak is going to end very shortly, I have a feeling.
Mine will never end.
But yeah, I'm happy with what that. I mean, by right, we should have gotten 6 out of 6 last week for 2020 games, but some of these ball games, I'm guessing, probably won't. We'll get some wrong. Anyway,
it's
Matthew.
It's a whole different ball game.
Oh, I better make note of that for the title of this Mystery Steam Reviews. Matthew, would you like your second Mystery Steam Review?
Hit me up.
If you're pissed off, smash some shit. It's tough to say. If you're sad, smash some shit. If you're on your time, smash some shit. If you want to smash some shit, smash some shit. What more could you want in life? And that's from appropriately named Rage Ragecraft. It's recommended and 29.2 hours on record. Matthew, your time starts now.
Interesting. I mean, what instantly popped into my head when I saw Smash Some Shit written so many times was like a Red Faction game, which I think have generic, bald space marines. I think the best way of honing this down is to ask a question.
In that case, I will pause the timer at 104. Okay. Ask away, is Matthew.
Is this game set on Earth?
Yes.
Oh.
Hold on. Do you know what? Just in case, I am going to double check, but I am like, hold on. This is me legitimately checking now. This isn't a Keanu Reeves incident. this game, yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This is indeed set on Earth. So Matthew, your timer restarts 104 now.
Then I don't think it's Red Faction, because that's famously set on Mars. Smash Some Shit. And the only other game I can think of is like Crackdown. Crackdown 3. Oh, Crackdown 3. Crackdown. Let me in the webcam.
Hmm?
While I say it, then it looks straight in the webcam.
Okay.
While I say Crackdown 3. No, he's not going to break. Because you could play as, what's his chops? Terry Crews. Terry Crews. Famously bald.
He's famously bald, yeah.
I mean, it is other qualities.
You've 11 seconds, Matthew.
Crackdown 3.
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer. Was it on Steam? That I don't know.
So, you know, there was quite a pattern to that review. It involved smashing some shit. First you were thinking, is it a Red Faction game? Your question made you say no. Is this some form of like third person open world action adventure?
Brought a horrible feeling. This isn't even on fucking Steam. I think it's on Microsoft only game. Piss! But
it
anyway.
Brought you to Crackdown 3 because you thought of the most famous bald man. Indeed, Terry Crews. And I can tell you, Matthew, that Crackdown 3 is the wrong answer.
Oh, my New Year's resolution! Fuck!
Sorry, I'm actually gutted. I am proper gutted. The correct answer was Prototype 2.
Oh, he doesn't. Does he smash shit?
Oh, he smashes loads of shit.
It's basically he sort of cuts stuff. He cuts. He hits things with tentacles. He whips.
He can turn his hands into like big blocks as well, I think. And he just.
Oh, fucking Prototype 2.
Which is in New York, I think. Yeah.
God. I've got to look up if it's on Earth. When it's New York.
No, to be fair,
I don't know. I just.
God, you've turned so nasty in a matter of seconds.
Shit on his resolution.
Horrible.
I'm fucking brilliant.
God, you're a horrible little boy when it really comes down to it, aren't you?
I don't know if New York's on Earth. Let me Google it.
Matthew, give me my second Mystery Steam review, please. God, things have turned horrible.
When older games tackled themes of morality and ethics, he just gunned down obvious big bad guys with guns who also happen to be crazy perverts. Zeta Guard, not recommended after 15.8 hours.
Time starts now. Guys who happen to be crazy perverts. That's obviously the hook, but what? Just gun down obvious big bad guys with guns who are crazy perverts. Big bad guys with guns who are crazy perverts. I'm going to pause the timer and I am if my genre is just going to be... Yeah, could I have my second opinion, Matthew, please?
Second opinion?
Yes, please.
Great stealth game, terrible Hitman.
Restarts? No. Terrible Hitman. Big bad guys who are obvious perverts. Oh, I'm trying to remember Hitman Absolution. Because that was quite a story-heavy Hitman. The main guy in that, like a pervert? Or is this actually a Hitman? I mean, I could ask a question which would be, is this a Hitman game? But if it's not, I don't really have anywhere else to go. A stealth game. Let's say Hitman Absolution. Let's say Hitman Absolution, Chris.
Is that your final answer?
That is my final answer.
So, you were presented with bad guys who also happen to be crazy perverts. Left you puzzled. You got a second opinion. Said it's a good stealth game. A terrible Hitman. Was it referring directly to a Hitman game or the concept of playing as a bad Hitman? The correct answer is Hitman Absolution.
Yes. God, you have really turned nasty, all right, haven't you?
No, I'm genuinely thrilled for you.
Thank you very much. I can see that. All right, chap. No, I'm happy. I'm very happy with that.
You should have made your New Year's resolution getting them all right, because it seems to be, you know, working for you.
It did so far. Well, maybe it's working for me because I didn't make the New Year's... Because, like, you know, people don't stick to New Year's resolutions. So...
I didn't stick to it out of choice.
Matthew, would you like...
I failed my resolution due to trickery.
Matthew, would you like your third and final Mystery Steam review?
Yes.
Fat, bald dude with a bad temper simulator. And that's from Confi. It is recommended 111.9 hours on record, 105.6 hours at time of review. Matthew, your time starts now.
Fat, bald dude with a bad temper. All right, hit me with that second opinion.
Okay. So we're going to pause the timer at 121. And Matthew, you want your second opinion, which is your third and final lifeline. So the second opinion of this video game is as follows, as I pull it up here. A struggling alcoholic has a bad week at work. A struggling alcoholic has a bad week at work. Your timer restarts now.
That brings to mind, like, Disco Elysium, but I don't think it's that, because I don't think he's bald. And he can be bald. But can he be bald? No, he's got hair. You can't equip different hair for him.
This isn't a created character.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm just trying to think if that character... No, I don't think so. Who are the other game alcoholics? Wario?
Is he an alcoholic?
Wario, Crash Bandicoot, Spyro, all of the also-rans, basically. Fat. How fat? You see, when you say fat, I think, like, a big balloon man, but I can't think of any game where you play as someone that fat. I mean, maybe I should ignore fat. Maybe he's not that fat, whoever this person is. Struggling alcoholic. It could be Max Payne 3. He's bald in that. He goes a bit Bryan Cranston in Breaking Bad. Imagine playing that for 100 hours. I mean,
10
okay.
seconds.
Oh, Max Payne 3.
Is that your final answer?
It's all I got.
So the fat bald man with a temper simulator kind of stumped you a little bit. The second opinion brought you to Disco Elysium, but eventually ending up on Max Payne 3. Obviously, you know, a detective that has struggled when it comes to his vices. But is Max Payne 3 the correct answer? Matthew, I can tell you that Max Payne 3 is indeed the correct answer.
Da da da, Castle's back, and he's full of game wisdom. I love Mystery Steam reviews.
Like, he himself refers to himself as a fat bald guy with a temper.
He's fat. Makes me feel very bad about my own body.
Well, the thing is, like, he calls himself fat. He's not fat, he's just not video game protagonist ripped. Essentially.
Yeah. Well, neither am I.
But yeah, not Max Payne, not fat. That is the official weak spot statement. Matthew, could I have my third and final Mystery Steam review, please?
Yes, you can. This is how you handle a classic. From the messed up AI of the Harvesters to trashy cutscenes, everything's in, says Worm. Recommended. 16.6 hours on record, 15.1 at the time of review.
That time starts now. This is how you handle a classic. The messed up AI of the Harvesters. Farming Simulator 2019. The trashy cutscenes. I haven't a clue. Harvesters. Pausing the timer at 107. Could I have the genre? Hit me up with the genre, Matthew, please. Whenever you're ready.
Real-time strategy video games.
No, because of your Command & Conquer stuff, you've got me thinking about that.
What Command & Conquer stuff?
What did you say? No, you didn't say... Yeah, you didn't say Command & Conquer. I'm talking out my arse. I'm also going to ask you a question.
Yeah.
And that question is... Did this game launch in the last 5 years?
Yes.
Oh, all right. You didn't even need to think about it, so it's very new. Restarting the timer, 107, no.
Oh, fuck. Maybe it's it's New York on Mars.
Real-time strategy game that is very recent. With a bold playable character. Now, we did say you weren't allowed like XCOM stuff where it's like, you know, generated. These need to be developer created characters. Harvesters. I don't get what Harvesters is, but I just thought. Like Civ 6 with like Gandhi, but you play as Gandhi. It is a strategy game and Gandhi's in it and he's bald and that's all I have really. Civilization 6, Chris.
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer, yeah.
You've gone for Civilization 6? On the basis that it has bald Gandhi, but does bald Gandhi appear in trashy cutscenes?
Forgot about that part, yep.
Does he appear in those trashy cutscenes as Gandhi?
Shit, this is Command & Conquer for fuck's sake!
The correct answer is... Command & Conquer Remastered Collection. Now listen, I am going to put my hands up here and say that I misread this. I thought it was bald characters, so I thought Kane... who's famously bald. You don't technically play as him because he is obviously telling you, but he is the face of that game. He is very much the Gandhi of Command and Conquer.
I've always said it, yeah.
I can understand if that threw you a bit, and I can only apologise for that, but it is fundamentally a draw, I feel.
Yeah, sure. I want to move on, to be honest, as quick as possible, because...
I misread the rules. You gave me that slightly shitty clue about New York.
That's playing the game. That's the mind games, Matthew. You have to play the mind games.
Well, obviously, like, my secret second New Year's resolution was, like, less mind game bullshit, but now I am throwing that in the bin, and next week it is full-on war. You are going to suffer like you have never suffered before.
When I even said Command and Conquer, what a tit.
Yeah, I was like, oh shit, got it. And I was like, should I draw attention to it by saying, I didn't say Command and Conquer? So I was like, shouldn't I?
Then I remembered that Gandhi is in a video game. Burning Questions is the part of the PC Gaming Weak Spot where we turn to you, lovely PC Gaming Weak Spot viewer. And we ask that you send in your feedback, your correspondence. We open the Weak Spot mailbag and we look at your burning questions. You can send them in to us, weakspot@rockpapershotgun.com. Email us any stage throughout the week. Now, because of time, we're going to keep this lean this week, and we are going to turn to our pal. Where is it? Here it is. And we're going to turn to our pal Jordan. Jordan got in touch and said, "Hi guys, obligatory. I love the show. First off, hope this week Matt's New Year's resolution has held true." Sorry,
Jordan, but chicanery got in the way.
Listen, you didn't pick a playable character. Anyway, I was doing my yearly replay of the two KOTOR games over Christmas, and it reminded me how good it would be for them to get the full remake treatment, much like Final Fantasy VII, but hopefully better. With what Larian has done in the CRPG space with Divinity Original Sin 2, and now Baldur's Gate 3, I think a lush open-world turn-based KOTOR with more up-to-date RPG mechanics under the hood would be brilliant. So my burning question is, what games would you guys want to see fully remade, and how do you think they could be improved? Cheers, Jordan. Does anything come to mind off the top of your head, Matthew? Anything that you played, you thought, God, if they changed this, this, and this, because I'd say, you know, Super Meat Boy Forever, but make it a 2D platformer. That comes to my mind straight away. Any old classics?
I guess they kind of have attempted to address this in the past, but, like, I would love Tomb Raider to go back to, like, the earlier style where it's just, like, you in a tomb. And I know they remade it for the Tomb Raider anniversary, and I really like that because it kind of dragged that old game design into, like, the modern age in terms of how it controlled. But I'd really love to see a kind of those older Tomb Raiders done with, like, you know, absolutely, like, mega graphics, but go, like, big atmospheric, really capture the sort of scariness of being in those places, which I actually... Maybe it's just because I played them when I was a kid, but I kind of got from the older games as well. It was like a sense of like, it's like quite daunting. Not laced with all the cinematic stuff and, you know, of the recent trilogy, you know. I'm not really very interested in Lara Croft as a character. I'm interested in her profession of going into tombs. So that's something I'd really like. But that's more of a wish for, like, I hope they continue Tomb Raider and that's what they do with the next trilogy. But... Right. You know, you could take the older games and just make them really, like, I don't really know how they do it, but like the actual kind of get rid of just all the auto-climbing platforming of current games, where platforming's, it just always feels like a bit of a hidden loading screen to me, where you're just moving Nathan Drake across a wall. Make something with, you know, a bit of, you know, the climbing hooks or whatever.
That's why I liked the climbing in Tomb Raider rather than Uncharted, because of her little hook that would see, you know.
It was still quite limited. I don't think it ever really pushed it, and it was still very, like, prescribed, but.
Yeah, I didn't think it was as bad as an Uncharted or a.
Want is like a Tomb Raider with a bit of the like freedom of movement that you get in like Death Stranding, like with the climbing ropes and the ladders, like the idea of like, I've got equipment, I can use it to kind of scale this environment. Something like that would be quite cool, because that's a game where you're just very aware of your body. And I'd like that in a maybe more cinematic environment.
Mm.
That's my pitch.
I mean, one that comes to me is the original, bless you, is the original Metal Gear Solid, but not like remade with the camera that they introduced in Subsistence. So like just normal behind the shoulder, third person camera with modern controls. It's quite a simple request. Mm-hmm. But like, if you play Metal Gear Solid now, like trying to shoot, which I suppose, look, I get it, it's a stealth game. You're not meant to use your SOCOM all that much, but when you do have to, God, it's shit. And you know, little things like going into first person, you have to stop dead in your tracks and then just like look around. So like a modernization of Metal Gear Solid would be very much appreciated, but maybe a spicier one would be, I don't know why I'm on such a Metal Gear Solid kick, but Metal Gear Solid 5, but so with the same like really good moment to moment gameplay, but with a little bit more pizzazz, a little bit more old style classic Metal Gear Solid cutscene, basically. Because I like that. I don't know. Like, I mean, I know that's why many people don't, I suppose, like the old Metal Gear Solids, because, I mean, they took it to the nth degree with Metal Gear Solid 4, when there was literally a cutscene that lasted for an hour and a half, which is too much. But yeah, a little bit more pizzazz and a little bit more of a cinematic feel within Metal Gear Solid 5. I think I would appreciate that. I would like that. So yes, as I say, we're going to kind of keep the mailbag lean this week. But if you want to send in your correspondence, please do your burning questions to weakspot@rockpapershotgun.com.
Ask us lots of Hitman questions. I like Hitman questions.
Yes.
I'm in a mood for talking about Hitman lots.
Plus it'll be out. Yeah, it's out next week. So interesting. Interesting indeed. But that just about does it for this week's edition of the PC Gaming Week Spot. Thank you very much, dear listener, or dear viewer, or dear consumer, for consuming. If you did enjoy this, of course, there are a number of ways you can get a little bit more of us. First of all, you can follow us on social media. I am at @Cullum_Ahern. Matthew is at @MrBasil_Pesto. If you want to talk to some like-minded people, head over to Discord, discord.gg/rockpapershotgun. Also, if you want to see the video version of the PC Gaming Week Spot, head over to youtube.com/rockpapershot. And also do all the liking, the commenting, the subscribing, and the ringing of the bell as well. All that is important. But if you want the audio version, subscribe to the PC Gaming Week Spot podcast via all your podcatching apps, including but not limited to Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, and so on and so forth. But do remember, for all of your PC gaming needs, keep it on rockpapershotgun.com. Another PC Gaming Week Spot in the bag, Matthew, and a nice time to chat about our hopes and wants and dreams for Hitman 3, and you know where it stands at the minute with the first two levels. So fingers crossed we'll know more about that in the not too distant future. But now, indeed, it is time to bid the PC Gaming Week Spot listener, viewer, consumer, adieu. So say goodbye, Matthew Castle.
Goodbye.
And say goodbye, Colm O'Hearn, Sloan Guffold.